Welcome to the fifth and final installment of the 61st episode of It Wasn't Me, a true crime podcast where we discuss murders that intrigue us. I'm Mercedes, and I'll be doing the show alone this time. Thank you so much for listening to last week's episode, where Cindy and I left off with the discovery of six victims of the Speed Freak killers, and this week, where I'm going to wrap it all up. Our show is often horrifying and graphic, and I will use offensive language, so if you have kids, put them away for a while and join me for a murder. Also, I'm passionate and always have been about true crime, but I must warn you that sometimes I'm going to make jokes and I'll probably laugh at myself. Visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com to find links to our social media pages. We drop a new episode every Friday morning, or at least we try to. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. And thanks for listening. If you are even slightly entertained by our Southern charm, please leave us a 5-star rating along with a comment. And if you're not happy with us, reach out to us. Let us know what we can do to improve. Also, spread the word. Recommend our podcast to your friends and family. Or, hey, even your enemies. My final installment, hopefully. And I'm all by myself this time. Wah. So we were going to record last night, but Cindy is, I guess, next door to her house. They're building a new house, and apparently they cut the line to her internet. So she couldn't record last night. And then today, she's traveling because her son is now in state. He's wrestling for state championship. So good luck out there, Bonebreaker. And hey, Cindy, I hope you're listening. All right, so I'm going to kind of make this short and sweet. Well, it can't be sweet because of these scumbags. But if you haven't already listened to parts 1 through 4 of episode 61, you might want to go do that now. Come back. I'll be here waiting. That way, you'll have a better understanding of the loose ends that I'm just about to tie up. So I left off last week with the discovery of the remains of several of Shermantine and Herzog's victims, courtesy of West Shermantine's hand-drawn maps. What I didn't tell you about fully was the shenanigans of the sheriff's department and how they handled the cases, as I should say. And I didn't tell you about how, like, the circus act of it all. Here we go. Are you ready? All right, just to recap, Shermantine was convicted of 4 murders and sentenced to death. And Lauren Herzog was convicted in 3 murders, but his sentence of 78 years to life was overturned on appeal. He ended up getting out on parole after serving only 14 years, and he ended up killing himself after he had a visit from Leonard Padilla, which I'll talk about in a minute. He ended up killing himself shortly after getting released because he learned that Shermantine was about to reveal the wells where all the victims were. So the search was renewed, the search for the victims, because the victims, a lot of them had been missing for years, and the police didn't really care, as was recorded by a few different media sources. So Shermantine renewed the interest, and he sent a bunch of letters everywhere, which he developed friendship/working relationship with a reporter named Scott Smith. Smith published a bunch of articles in a local newspaper there, and it drew the attention of Sacramento bounty hunter Leonard Padilla. And if you've watched Nancy Grace, you've seen Leonard Padilla. He wears like a black jacket and a cowboy looking hat. He contacted the reporter and said, look, I'll put up the $33,000 if his information proves valid. So of course it was. There is at least one more well in the rural area, and Padilla has urged the sheriff's office to keep digging, but Steve Moore is like, no, I'm not. He said, I talked to the property owner. The property owner said that the well had been sealed off years ago, and I'm not pursuing this anymore. Why should I? The dude's in prison. He's on death row. We don't need to worry about it. But think about it. What if this was your family member? Your family member's missing. It's possible. Could my family member be at the bottom of this well? The Shermantine is saying that's where these people are. The complaints got louder and louder. Victims' families. Shermantine, he was contacting other law enforcement agencies like, yeah, you might want to check the well. These people wrote letters to representatives and to the governor. They collected signatures on petitions. They went to the media and they contacted the sheriff on an hourly basis pretty much. You have the map to the wells, dig them up. They became a pain in the ass. The sheriff was finally pressured to excavate the well because now he's got everyone's attention. He was pretty pissed off about it. That was quite obvious by how this excavation was done. Last time I left off with the map and the wells, but I didn't tell you how they dug up the wells. The sheriff's office used a backhoe. A backhoe is, how do I describe a backhoe? Please just look it up. It's much easier if you don't know. It does have the little claw things that pull dirt out of the ground and digs wells up. So the sheriff's office used a backhoe to excavate the well with no care at all for any of the remains that may have been pulled up, had no respect for those remains or even of preserving any evidence. It was careless and unprofessional. Joan Shelley was one of the main instigators in getting the sheriff to excavate the well. She had gotten a letter from Shermantine saying, your daughter's in this well. So of course, you know, she's going to be a very loud voice. Her daughter, Joanne, was a 16-year-old who had been out with Herzog and Shermantine earlier that day. And she was dropped off. She told her mom that she had a date that night with a mystery person. And then the date stood her up. She ended up disappearing by the time her mom got home. Her mom insisted that she didn't want her daughter dug up with a backhoe. Don't dig my daughter up with a backhoe. She said that she was reassured by Detective Shonda Bassett that the office had only planned to use a backhoe just to get through the first layers of dirt, which had hardened. It was almost concrete, like it was hardened, and get past the discarded farm materials that people had thrown down there. Appliances, just these wells were like dumps of trash and debris. And she assured her, you know, once we get to where we suspect the bodies are, we're going to not use the backhoe. Bassett told Shelley that when and if the county found any human remains, they would then switch to shovels to carefully remove the bones by hand. Well, this was a big fat lie, because after finding a bone, investigators continued using the backhoe to remove the remains. All of this filmed on the local TV station. Captured on film in front of her mother's eyes, Joan Shelley watched as the backhoe's claw pulled up skeletal remains that were wearing her daughter's shirt. So in other words, her daughter's remains were picked up in the claws of this backhoe and just dumped in the pile, just like dirt. I mean, can you imagine? She was infuriated. I mean, she was heartbroken and pissed and just appalled at the whole thing. And she ended up filing a suit later against the county, saying that they violated her due process rights to dispose of her daughter's remains as she chose. In that suit, she testified in her deposition that seeing a backhoe removing those bones made her feel like her child was murdered all over again. Investigators said it was impossible to use anything other than an excavator due to the hardness of the soil, the depth of the well, and state occupational safety rules. But Hobson won the suit because the final judgment read, the county elected to use large earth-moving equipment to excavate a well they knew was likely to contain human remains, including those of plaintiff's daughter, Joanne Hobson. While initially using an excavator may have been reasonable, the court cannot say as a matter of law that the county's decision to continue using the backhoe was a reasonable one once digging had proceeded to a level where human remains were discovered. In other words, once you saw human remains, then you should have stopped. Before she finally laid her daughter's remains to rest, she actually had her daughter's remains cremated, her attorney said, no, you need to send them off for DNA analysis. The results came back, and she found out that the remains that the police had given her belonged to three different people. And she was devastated, which is highly understandable. But she was very thankful she had gotten her daughter back in the first place, because there were a lot of families still missing their loved ones. The remains of her daughter and the other victims would likely still be missing if it hadn't been for a journalist, a bounty hunter, and a convicted murderer, all of whom I told you about last week, like I said. There were many other parents and families who were just as heartbroken by not only their missing daughters and sons, but also by the lack of concern of the San Joaquin Sheriff's Department. All these bone fragments had been discovered. Could they possibly be all their missing loved ones? In part three, I told you about 32-year-old Tracy Melton, who went missing in May 1998. She had gone missing only a few months before Cindy Vanderhyde went missing. When the bones were discovered in that well, Tracy's sister, Sharon Melton, thought, I wonder if any of those bones belong to my sister. So she called the San Joaquin County Sheriff's authorities. Now, mind you, this is in April 2012. She was calling to get an update on her sister's case. Her sister went missing in 1998. Look, I know you found a bunch of bones. Could they be Tracy's? Would you check? Remember that police and media had lost interest in Tracy's case after they discovered that she was a known drug addict and her last known whereabouts was a methadone clinic. So really, they couldn't get anyone involved in her case to help in the search. Sharon became hopeful that maybe she might get answers about her sister's disappearance. She knew that the bones had been DNA tested, and she was hoping maybe there's a match. Sharon was completely unprepared for what authorities told her when she made her inquiry in 2012. She learned that her sister's remains had been in police custody for 10 years. 10 years. Here's a story. In 2002, a roadside crew was cleaning the side of the road when they found a partial skeletal remains along a road in Linden, California. They called authorities, evidence along with the remains was collected, and one of the bones was sent to the California Department of Justice for DNA analysis. That same year, authorities requested a DNA sample from Sharon Melton to be used for comparison with the skeletal remains, but they didn't tell her that. They just said, we're going to put your DNA in a database in case something comes up. In February 2012, 10 years later, those remains were finally identified as those of Tracy Melton. The identification would have been remarkable in the case, except for one small problem. They didn't notify Tracy's family that the remains were Tracy. They didn't even notify Tracy's family that maybe they had found her remains. So 10 years later, she learned that law enforcement had suspected that the partial human remains that they had found belonged to her sister. She told reporters, when police spoke with me, they said they had compared my DNA to the remains in 2003, but they did not have a 100% positive identification. They tried again in 2008. It was the same thing. They had a percentage, but not 100. Finally, in April of last year, they confirmed it was my sister. Now, I just have to say, I know that DNA, even if it's a 90% match, is pretty close, right? I don't know. I would not have bought that story. Now, as you can imagine, she was infuriated. Police had suspected that the remains found in 2002 belonged to Tracy, yet they never told the family. Sharon said, all these years they had suspected it was her and never even notified us. She told the Huffington Post that the authorities never notified her because it slipped through the cracks. It's just been devastating, she said. All these years, we had been waiting for answers, and they had known for nearly a year and never notified us. I'm very hurt over it. In 2002, they didn't do anything to find the rest of the remains. They didn't call us or let us know. Her family always hoped that Tracy was still alive and might one day come home. Her son Darren said, I always had the hope she was out there, maybe left town because Stockton was too rough. I was hoping she had made a better life somewhere else. And her daughter told reporters that she and her brother had a tough life because, you know, of their mom being missing. Sharon Melton was also upset because she claimed the authorities did little to find the rest of the remains, but they still weren't doing anything. She said, they said they did a perimeter search in 2002 and have been meaning to go back with a backhoe. We know what they do with those. My sister could have been buried in that area. We don't even have my sister's skull or anything. And it hurts that now, 10 years later, they say they're going to go back and do this, but won't tell us when or anything else. I am starting to think they just told me that to pacify me. I mean, really? Yes, I'm sure. So poor Tracy has been missing, and nobody ever went in the area where her remains were found to see if there were more remains. Although it's not clear what happened to Melton, her family believes that she was a victim of Wes Shermantine and Laura Herzog. The two convicted killers knew her, and her partial remains were found not far from the location of the other two victims that were found in the well. Sharon Melton said her sister's children are still trying to come to grips with the news of their mom's disappearance. It's hard for them, she said. All this time, they didn't think their mom was deceased. They felt she had gone somewhere else. Now they are struggling with the knowledge that she was a murder victim. She said, the only good thing I can say that has come of any of this so far is that my sister has been identified. It's torture when day after day of not knowing turns into year after year of not knowing. Now that we know she has been found, that part of it is over. Now we would like to know how and why. As you can imagine, this little mishap on the part of the San Juan County Sheriff's Department also blew up in the media. We have the shenanigans with the excavator, and now they never even notified the next of kin about these remains. So, of course, there's a press conference. And at the press conference, the sheriff himself issued a very brief statement regarding the mishandling of Tracy Melton's ID. No explanation, No excuses. We dropped the ball. There's nothing more to say. Sheriff Steve Moore said that he accepts full responsibility for the oversight. There are no excuses forthcoming, only the pledge that we will do whatever we can in support of the Melton family in this case. He further stated that an internal review is being conducted and new procedures are being developed to make sure this very unfortunate incident does not occur in the future. Now, this is from the same sheriff whose office dismissed Tracy's case, her missing case, because she was last seen at a methadone clinic, and they posted that all over their Facebook. Anyway, they never ruled out Shermantine and Herzog and Melton's case, but, you know, they never approved it. Her remains were found in the same area as the well where the thousands of bone fragments were found. And other people also reached out with the same suspicions. Could those bones be, could they be my loved one? There were a lot of people who stepped forward. In part two, I mentioned Gail Marks. Remember, she was the 18-year-old who went missing after she went to work with her mom, Sue Kaiser, and she went and got her driver's license, and she was never found. She didn't show up to work. Well, her mom, Sue Kaiser, reached out. She's like, is my daughter one of those? I mean, she would disappear from Stockton. She never got answers from the police. So she wrote to Shermantine. She said, are you responsible for the disappearance of my daughter? And Shermantine wrote her back. Sue Kaiser said, I would like to explain that when I first heard he was talking about where there were bodies, I was excited. And I hoped my daughter would be one of them. Imagine a mom sitting here being excited that her daughter's body might be at the bottom of a well. OMG, I felt so sick. I have been writing to Shermantine, hoping he would tell me information about Gail. After about three letters, I realized he didn't have anything to do with what happened to her. But I am still writing to him in hopes he will give information that will reveal other burial sites. He only revealed three. He said there were five. So there are still two more out there. So he says. Anyway, there were other victims and victim families who, there were other victims' families who came forward. Justine Villela, or Villela, believes her father, Philip Cabot Lloyd Martin, may have been killed by Shermantine at Herzog and then tossed in the well. She said that on October 30th, 1993, her dad never picked her up from school. Could you imagine that? You're a child waiting for your dad to show up and no one ever shows up. He was never seen again. He was a transient construction worker who lived in his car. He was an addict. He struggled with addiction. He worked in construction, so he knew Shermantine. They worked together. He was also a drug user, so they most likely knew each other and associated with each other in that world. She said that she had picked Shermantine up out of a lineup years ago in the investigation into her father's disappearance. She didn't elaborate on that. I'm wondering, did she witness something? When she was interviewed at the time, she told reporters that, sure, there's some possibility that my father's disappearance is not related at all to this, but there's a correlation between her dad, Shermantine, and Herzog, and it's all in the same time frame. Why couldn't the bones in the well belong to her dad? But her dad's bones weren't in the well. There's also Sheila Junker. She believes that the well could bring answers to her sister's disappearance. Her sister disappeared on August 19, 1982. 16-year-old Ruth Ann Lemon left home in Modesto for a nearby supermarket and never returned. According to one article, Junker said that she never forgets a face, and she told detective over the years to investigate Shermantine and Herzog because her sister had run around with Shermantine and once went to the Calaveras Frog Jump with a group including him. Calaveras Frog Jump. I love that short story. I just didn't know it was a real thing. Anyway, she said that Shermantine had known her sister. Her sister knew him. Shermantine, in a letter to the Record, said that he, as teens, he and Herzog had to move to Modesto for a time in order to get out of trouble or something. So he was in Modesto for quite some time. Then there's Sylvia Stanley, who was last seen in Modesto, California on June 3rd, 1986. She was seen getting into a blue or green truck just after being released from a two-week stint in jail for a drug charge. Apparently, she had talked with her family earlier in the day, telling them, oh, I don't need a ride home. My boyfriend's picking me up. But she didn't tell anyone the boyfriend's name, and no one had ever met him. She was a mother of three young children at the time of her disappearance, and she's never been heard from again. Then there's Susan Bender, who went missing in 1986. She was 14 years old, last seen getting into a van at a Greyhound station in Modesto. Her mom had always suspected a family member of taking her daughter, but when Shermantine revealed that he and Herzog had lived in Modesto, thought, well, maybe my daughter's in the bottom of one of those wells. Law enforcement from other counties were also curious, too. Did any of the bones belong to missing people from their counties? Sherman Tynick contacted other people and said Herzog abducted Michaela Garrett. So investigators from Haywood came to inquire about a pair of shoes that was found in the well. Could they belong to Michaela? So who is Michaela Garrett? Michaela Garrett was a 9-year-old who, on the morning of November 19, 1988, she and her best friend left their scooters at the door of the Rainbow Grocery in Hayward, California, and they went inside to buy snacks. When they came out, they noticed that one of the scooters had been moved deeper into the parking lot behind a car. As Michaela walked past the car towards her scooter, the driver grabbed her, forced her into the front seat. He backed out and sped off. This happened in broad daylight, and people were shocked by the brazenness of it. They wanted justice. They wanted blood. They wanted Michaela back. Sherman Tynick implicated Herzog in that abduction. They were suspects in many unsolved murders and disappearances in California, Nevada, and Utah. And when the FBI got involved, they seized almost $40,000 worth of guns from Sherman Tynick's parents to thoroughly examine them in an attempt to link them to weapons from other crimes, including the 1994 murder of a woman in Tulum County whose dismembered body was found in a burned-out barrel. But law enforcement from other jurisdictions, including the FBI, were not welcome in San Joaquin. With all the publicity going on about the bones and the sheriff's failure to notify the Meltons of Tracy's remains, Joanne Hobson's mom, the excavation shenanigans, Sherman Tynick's publicity stunts, people were starting to get pissed. There's something dirty in the San Joaquin Sheriff's Department. Here are some of those complaints. And a lot of it, I will read directly from letters, their official letters. So some of this stuff I'm quoting 100%. In 2015, a state senator, Galgiano, I believe is her name, there were detectives, parents of missing children, including Michaela Garrett's mother, confronted officials at the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office after allegations arose that the Central Valley Department destroyed missing persons records and stonewalled other police agencies during investigations of the infamous Speed Freak Killers case. So according to a legal motion filed against the sheriff's office, a San Joaquin sheriff's deputy informed a Hayward detective that a pair of shoes similar to the shoes that Michaela was wearing when she went missing, a pair of Mary Jane's, was found at the bottom of a well. The Hayward investigator was not allowed to see the shoes or even a photograph of the shoes, according to the court records. The detective, who had been acting on the tip that Herzog may have abducted Michaela, finally gave up. But Michaela's mom didn't. She said in a blog post that Hayward police to this day have not seen the evidence, and people were shocked at the lack of concern or help from the San Joaquin Sheriff's Office, who refused access to the evidence to anyone. The ability to identify victims was removed from state and federal databases, making it impossible for families of missing loved ones to ever have answers. So they were actually dumping missing persons files so that people would not come and bother them about it. Steve Moore, saying no Speed Freak Killers files were ever deleted by his department. He said his employees have always been willing to work with other law enforcement agencies. He said a number of cold case files, including those presumed to be associated with Speed Freak Killers cases, were transferred to the California Department of Justice for a period of time for the purpose of management and oversight only, he said, adding they were then transferred back. But according to the motion, Bassett, when contacted by Hayward police investigating a possible connection between Michaela's disappearance and the Speed Freak Killers, told the officer that she couldn't give any information without permission, and she expressed no interest in the other police officer's investigation and did not offer him any assistance. A Reno detective provided a sworn declaration saying that he was forced to conduct his own investigation into a missing Reno girl linked to the killers, even getting a cadaver dog hit. But San Joaquin sheriff's deputies, after they began digging the spot he found, Sheriff Moore complained to his police chief about encroaching on his jurisdiction and expressed anger in a face-to-face meeting at Stockton headquarters. The meeting ended with rigid cordiality, and I left with no confidence in the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office. Retired FBI agent Jeff Reinick testified under oath that Sheriff Steve Moore's behavior in the Speed Freak Killer case was beyond inappropriate. Senator Galgiani received a letter from Sherman Tynick describing where Joan Shelley's daughter's body and the bodies of other victims were buried. On September 7th, 2010, Galgiani's office forwarded the letters to Sheriff Moore, the state senator said in court records. 3 days later, lead investigator Shonda Bassett requested that the State Department of Justice remove the missing persons files and evidence in them from the National Computer Database, according to emails obtained by Galgiani's office through public records requests. The computerized law enforcement system allows agencies to share information and includes DNA profiles and other evidence that is irreplaceable. Casey Leonard, an official with the State Department of Justice, said in an email that sheriff's officials insisted on the cancellations. She said that this is not something that should normally be practiced and Department of Justice advises against it. All missing person records should be kept active until a full body is recovered. Some of the cases were saved by state officials, but others have been lost forever. And that's why they think they have problems identifying the woman who was in the well that went unidentified. In addition, a San Joaquin County forensic pathologist sent a letter of resignation to the county because she said Sheriff Steve Moore allegedly manipulated numerous murder investigations in a manner that is illegal. Dr. Susan Parson wrote in her resignation letter that Sheriff Moore attempts to influence and control our professional judgment and conclusions and had made her day-to-day experience in the county personally unbearable and professionally unsustainable. Now, I just want to point out for the record now that you should keep that in mind, because if the sheriff is trying to influence the forensic pathologist report, that could be grounds for dismissal in other murder cases, don't you think? Anyway, several other law enforcement agencies have expressed interest in hopes of finding answers to their missing person cases. And Shermantine has said that the victims were taken from towns throughout Central Valley. So anyone with a missing person should be able to go and inquire about the bones that were found in the well. After the botched excavation of the bodies and all the issues that have been going on with the San Juan King Sheriff's Department, the senator wrote a letter to Robert Mueller, who was then director of the FBI, requesting his assistance. She wrote that she believes from Leslie's share that other law enforcement agency needs, it's just too big for this little agency to handle, and they just don't really have the money to handle it. The FBI needs to be involved. And she had a pretty long list of reasons. She said, number one, the San Joaquin County Sheriff did not follow up on information from a detective's interview that they received in 2004, which could have led to the recovery of victims. Number two, Shermantine himself provided Sheriff Moore with information in 2010, including maps that detailed out the locations of the Linden Well. The agency disregarded the information and canceled missing persons records, including Joanne Hobson's, on September 10, 2010. Number three, the sheriff was again provided information in 2012 and initially stopped any efforts to locate victims. However, due to public pressure, he was forced to follow up in February 2012. The sheriff claimed to have no prior information on the Linden Well, but knew exactly which victim family to bring to the site. The fact that they knew which family to bring to a specific site indicates they had detailed information contrary to what they stated. Number five, in all the time they had the information about the Linden Well site, the sheriff sought no information, researched no information, and ignored all assets available in the state and nation, including the FBI, and ignored and excluded their own expert forensic pathologist. Number six, when faced with conducting the recovery, the San Joaquin Department of Public Works superintendent advised the soil was extremely stable, which would have enabled skilled forensic workers to recover the victims. Jill Spriggs and a co-worker actually entered the site. Number seven, the San Joaquin County Sheriff used a heavy excavator to dig through the well, and when faced with the fact that victims were in the well, they made the shocking and callous choice to dig through the victims with the excavator, causing shock and emotional harm to the victims and witnesses. Number eight, while reporting victim items located beyond 30 feet, preventing forensic processing, it is apparent from pictures taken by DOJ personnel that victim items were encountered at a shallow depth and therefore demonstrating the availability of forensic processing to the Linden Well site. Number nine, Sheriff Steve Moore testified that he made no decisions and did not have information about the recovery, yet his assistant staff, Ruben Orozco, testified that he briefed Moore frequently on a daily basis about all events related to the recovery. It is believed that the sheriff made the foundational decisions that led to the callous, indifferent, and utter destruction of the Linden Well site. Number 10, the San Joaquin County Sheriff used an anthropologist that was not a forensic pathologist. The anthropologist based her findings on DNA and dental identifications and caused rampant commingling of the victim's remains. And for that, she's referring to Joanne Hobson being found with the remains of two other victims, or her bones being mixed in. Number 11, Shanna Bassett eventually made three piles of bones to reflect the suspected number of victims recovered from the well and considered the cremation as indigent, the third identified victim and her fetus. That I have question marks by because I didn't quite understand it. Number 12, the sheriff tried to influence the victims' families to cremate returned remains, thereby destroying evidence of the commingling. Number 13, on September 10th, 2010, the sheriff canceled several missing persons records in the National Crime Information Center and the California Law Enforcement Teletype System, including the record of Joanne Hobson. 14. It is possible the third unidentified victim from the Linden Well cannot be identified because her persons record was canceled. Number 15. The cancellations occurred 3 days after the San Joaquin Sheriff received information from Wesley Shermantine providing details as to unrecovered victim locations. And 16, Shanda Bassett is unable to locate many missing persons records after receiving inquiries from families. So this is a fucked up case right here. This goes on and on and on, but what I will say is that at some point they're like going, what is going on with the sheriff? And then they realize that he had his own little junket on the side. According to Carlos Prieto, he risked his career by providing attorney's office testimony that Sheriff Moore and others under his direct command embezzled evidence guns. Internal sheriff documentation obtained by it was a really good article in 209 Times clearly demonstrated that Sheriff Moore illegally sold fully automatic weapons and evidence guns, some against specific court order. Tori Verber Salazar admitted in writing that Deputy Prieto's claims of guns getting stripped, sold, and then purchased by deputies, including Sheriff Moore at substantial discounts, was of concern. But according to Mrs. Salazar, somehow concluded these actions were not illegal. So basically, he's embezzling guns, selling them at a discounted rate to him and his buddies, and or making money off of it. Now, he did lose the election. There's a new guy in town, Mr. Sheriff Pat Winthrow. One of Winthrow's campaign promises was that he would keep looking for answers. And he's already come to task for that. Just last March 2020, a San Joaquin County farmer found a bone in a well on his property. When he called authorities in, they did realize it was a bone, and Sheriff Winthrow announced at a press conference that they could not identify the bone as human or animal, so they had to send it to a lab for testing. But pandemic, so of course, the analysis has been backlogged. Sheriff Winthrow said if the bone is human, that it could be tied to the Speed Freak killers. Winthrow reminded victims' families of his promise to not let this case go. He said that before he gave the press conference, he had reached out to as many family members as they could find who had been victimized by the Speed Freak killers in the past. He said that those families have been frustrated, alleging the previous administration dropped the ball in helping to identify their loved ones. The sheriff says his department is ready to finally unearth some closure for the families. We're not going to quit until we find out and get the answers. Investigators haven't reached out to Wesley Shermantine, but if the bone is human and a DNA connection is made, likely they're going to reach out to see if he will, you know, fess up to any other well sites. Bones that were recovered in past searches have also been sent to a lab to determine whether they're animal or human, but again, pandemic. So we're still awaiting analysis for those. Just this past December, only 4 short months ago, Sheriff Winthrow created a cold case unit. This cold case investigative unit is tasked with reviewing unsolved crimes throughout San Joaquin County and to help track down a number of missing persons. The unit is composed of 2 detectives, a full-time deputy, and a sergeant, and they have already tracked down 10 missing people, all of them alive and well. The detectives have also been working on developments in the Shermantine cases. Our unit has been working very hard and will continue to do so. This process is slow as the cases need to be reviewed more than once to have a good understanding of the crime, parties involved, evidence, and more. So the process is also slow because getting information from the the 80s and 90s is more difficult since the details are older. Investigators are looking through Shermantine's letters and hand-drawn maps more deeply. They've actually sparked visits to a number of sites where remains might be located. The unit is working with experts on how they can incorporate technology like ground-penetrating radar, dogs, probing techniques before attempting to recover the remains of potential victims. I mean, it is extremely expensive, I imagine, and who's going to foot that bill? So they're seeking help from other places. Bones that were recovered in past searches under the previous administration have been sent to anthropologists, and the unit is working to clear the backlog of cases that qualified for their assistance. I honestly do not believe that we are finished with West Shermantine or the victims in the well. With the case of Sheriff Moore, I think West Shermantine is going to raise his ugly ass head and try to get himself acquitted based on, you know, mishandling of evidence or some shit. Wes Shermantine and Lauren Herzog are scary as hell, and there are tons of documentaries, podcasts, books, etc. on them. A lot better than what I'm giving you, but hey, you know, I'm doing my best. Love you all. I also did see that Reed from Criminal Minds brings up Wesley Shermantine and Lauren Herzog in an episode, but I don't know which episode that was. So if you see any developments or you know something that I missed, give us a shout out. I'll watch for developments and I'll fill you in. That's it for now. And I hope I didn't bore you to death without my pal Cindy. So anyway, thanks a lot, guys, for listening to this week's murder. We appreciate sharing our passion with you. We thank you for your support. If you'd like to support us even further, please consider subscribing to our podcast and giving us a 5-star rating and a comment. Your subscription and comments are essential to our success. You can do this on your favorite platform. For more information, links to our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com. We are so grateful to spend our time together to share our murderous stories. Thanks for your support. Please recommend It Wasn't Me to your friends and family. And thanks for our Patreon supporters. We love you. You can sign up at patreon.com/itwasn'tmepod. Thanks again, y'all. And remember, it wasn't me.